Okay, so now we can start talking about the meditation, especially for beginners. And of course, meditation is learning how to relax your mind. And I like to use the word relax, not concentrate, because you already have enough work to do with your brain. Your brain has been so overworked that one day we're going to have royal commissions for abuse of brains. And I think many of you will be guilty of abusing your brain by thinking and worrying too much. So we learn how to relax our brain, relax our mind, relax our body, and thereby we get this beautiful sense of peace, ease, and also energy comes back. So much of the problems in life come from tiredness. Anger, anxiety, even depression come from a very deep-seated tiredness in life. And just by letting the body and the mind relax, much of that tiredness, that exhaustion with life, tends to sort of vanish, and you recharge and get some wonderful results afterwards. But in order to relax the body and relax the mind, the biggest problem is the thinking. Always thinking about thinking, and thinking about thinking about thinking. And we just go so complex in our mind. So, we learn how to find a way of relaxing our body and relaxing our mind. And a little simile which I've been using recently is just like a guitar string. If it's tight, it makes a high-pitched noise. If it's moderately tight, it makes sort of a much lower noise. But if it's not tight at all, if it's not stressed, you can hit it, pluck it, and it makes no sound at all. And that is just like the human mind, the brain. If it's not stressed, things hit it, experiences, life, and it doesn't make any reverberating sounds. In other words, the thoughts just don't come up. The reason why we think so much and worry so much and are so anxious is because our brains are so tight, like a string which has been pulled so tight. And our job is to try and loosen that stress in the mind. Loosen the tightness of the string so it's nice and easy and things happen to it and it makes no sound. No more thoughts. The other simile, which is so similar, is looking at your mind, that inner world, like a lake. And on that lake, the waves are the thoughts. So the thoughts, which we usually all we ever see, are just surface phenomena, surface things. They're not really, you know, who you are, what's really going on underneath. They're just on the surface. And of course, those waves are only there because the poor lake is being agitated by the wind or something else shaking it. And our job is to not worry so much about the thoughts, but what's underneath them, and calm that down, settle it down. So don't worry about the thoughts. They're just symptoms of a mind which is a bit agitated. And we learn how to calm our mind down. Even just thinking, calm. You can see underneath all of the worries and the memories, underneath all of that, the mind calms down and becomes peaceful. And when it becomes peaceful, all the thoughts tend to vanish. At least they get much less. And then you can come to what we call peace. Peace of mind. It's such a beautiful thing to have, and this is actually how you achieve it. So that is the overview of the meditation. Learning how to relax the body, relax the mind, just allow the thoughts just to wear themselves out in the sense of they just nothing underneath is actually agitating the mind. So no tightness in the string. So it means that everything just fades away and you are peaceful. What do you think it would be like being peaceful? What it means being peaceful is you're just right here, being aware, being in life rather than talking back to it. Because I like the simile of all the thoughts are just like you having a conversation with life, and often it's not what's happening now, talking about what might happen in the future, talking about what happened a long time ago. It's being in life, we're just lingering in the past, or just worried and afraid, planning for the future. So we learn how to let those things go, remembering now is the place your future is being made. Right now is the only time you can do anything about your future. So if you're concerned about your future, if it's a big deal what's going to happen next, make sure you put your attention in the present. This is where your future is being made. And also, this will be your past tomorrow morning when you wake up. So if you want to have a wonderful past to remember, make it in the present. So staying in the present moment, just you win both ways. You have a nice past to remember, and you have a beautiful future. So it just makes a lot of sense, and just makes it idiotic to keep worrying about the past, which you cannot change. It's all done and dusted, so we learn how to let it go. Never carry the coffins of the past on your head. They are coffins, they're dead moments. You can imagine a person just walking down the street, this whole pile of coffins, piled on their head, not just one, two. All your bad memories, they're dead stuff, for goodness sake. Throw it away. Let it go. So, that's letting go. Always remember that every time that you think of the past, you're carrying a coffin. Which is actually time for another joke, I think. Did I tell the last time that joke about the Australian lady visiting England?
I don't know, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. Tell us it now.
Okay. No, it was one of these Australian women. They were visiting England recently. And, you know, when you go to England, you know, you go, one of the places you have to go and see the old castles. You don't have old castles in Armidale. So, not really old castles. So she went to one of these really ancient castles and, you know, got the tour. And you go into those underground parts of the castles, they're really spooky, and every time you walk the floorboards always creak, and whenever you open a door that creaks too, all the wind, they're supposed to have good windows, but always goes through the windows, and you hear this it gets really spooky and dark down there, and of course terrible things happened in those places in the past. So it's really creepy. If ever you want to scare yourself, go into those English castles. And at the end of the tour, the Australian had to ask, you know, the guy. He said, "Have you ever seen a ghost in this castle?" And her guide told her, "Madam, ever since I've been living in this castle, I've never ever seen a ghost." And she said, "How long have you been living in this castle?" And he said, 300 years. Not bad. Anyway. Anyway, so go back to meditation. So don't carry ghosts of the past in your mind. Be scared of them. Throw them out. Get rid of them. So we learn how to be peaceful. But most of all, we learn how to relax. That is the trick of being peaceful. Don't have like a tight mind. Don't have a tight body. Otherwise you touch it and it hurts. Something happens and you keep thinking about it. When you really relax, just these things just pass you by. So, how do you relax your body, relax your mind? Exactly the same method. You have to be aware. First of all, it's called mindfulness. It's nothing special. Everybody is mindful, but they're usually mindful of the wrong things. So we're first of all be aware of your body sitting in your chair. I'm going to guide you. You don't need to take notes or remember this. Except the jokes, remember those. Because at the end when you go home and people say, "So how did it go today?" Tell them about the meditation, they'll be bored stiff. Tell them about the jokes and say, oh, that's interesting, I'll go there again next week. So, it's true, I give all these talks, and afterwards, I just for some feedback, I ask, what do you remember about what I said tonight? And they said the jokes. That's what I remember. That's why I give them. Give the punters what they ask, what they want. Anyway, go back to the mindfulness, being aware. And once you are aware of, you start with your body, you can actually feel just how tight it is, how tense it is, how irritating it is, how painful it is. And then you don't just stay there and just be aware. Do something about it. If you've got an ache or a pain, move your body. If you want to cough, please cough. If you want to scratch, scratch. But don't scratch the person sitting next to you, only yourself, for goodness sake, otherwise you'll get in big trouble. So in other words, we are mindful enough of our body and we are kind to our body. You know, it's amazing just how many people are just so unaware of their body. Because they're too busy doing other stuff. Read a book about heart attacks. And the cardiologist who wrote this book said there's no such thing as getting a big heart attack out of the blue. But your heart gives you many signs, many warnings. But the thing is, we're too busy to really notice them. We're too busy doing something else. So when the big one comes, it really is a wake-up call. But if you're aware, the body's always telling you what it needs, what to do, and how to do it. So being mindful and sensitive to our own body when we start. And this is not just to get into a nice position of comfort. I take this much, much further and have great results with this. To actually to start once you get into a good posture, then find one part of your body which is irritating, which is stressed, which is painful, and focus on it. Zoom in on the part of the body which you can feel needs to be relaxed a bit more. It may be just like a thigh. It may be like a knee. And look, quite honestly, I've had incredible results with this. I keep telling people about one email which I got a few months ago from a lady in Eastern Europe who had chronic arthritis and had to take all these really heavy painkillers. And she sent me this email saying, thank you. I've been following this method for about 6 months, 8 months. Oh, that's all she did it for. And she doesn't need any more painkillers because her arthritis is totally gone. And that was amazing. When I read that email and said, thank you, Ajahn Brahm, to take away somebody's pain like that, constant 24-hour pain, and the only way to deal with that is these really, really heavy painkillers, which have terrible side effects. It's wonderful. You can give someone that gift of a pain-free later part of their life. Amazing. And I've had other really great results with this. So, what you do, you focus on a part of the body. You get to be aware of your own body. Feel it. Feel it as fully as you possibly can. Don't do this half-heartedly. Do it fully, really aware. Feel that part of the body. And once you can feel that part of the body, you can actually get some control over it. The mindfulness gives you feedback. So you can feel it, and then you can learn how to relax it. You know, it's exactly the same way that sports people learn how to use their body to a very, very high standard. Dancers, athletes, they've got to be so much aware of their body that they actually know exactly how to use it. For most of us, we're not much aware at all. But here you're aware of your part of your body and you get this wonderful feedback, feeling it get tenser or feeling it relax. And how? What did you do to relax that part of the body? Or what causes it to be tighter, more irritating? And you'll find, just trial and error usually, you'll find it's called letting go, letting it be. That's what relaxes things. And you actually feel that. You know, it's an attitude of mind. You may not be too clear what it is at first, but you find the body actually relaxes. The ache in the sort of, the arthritis ache in the elbows or in the knees, wherever you have it, actually relaxes a little bit. It gets less intense. But if you worry about it, if you're anxious about it, if you try and get rid of it, it gets tighter and it gets more painful. So you get this feedback which teaches you little by little how to relax more and more and more and more and more. And when you learn this by mindfulness giving you feedback, you know exactly how to take a part of the body and really relax it. So you've got an ache in the knee, and after 10 or 15 minutes, the ache is totally gone. The food poisoning, which I had a few years ago, totally gone in 20 minutes, just by relaxing my guts. And an ache or an itch in the nose. I had to go on TV in Korea a few months ago and started sneezing the day, but it was minus 15 degrees, you can't expect much. Started sneezing. And so I'm going to go on TV in about half an hour, just actually to meditate on my nose so it's totally stopped and there's no more sneezing. Stop the cold. So this is actually what you can do if you've got some control over your parts of your body by being aware of that and learning how to let go, learning how to relax it and ease it. Just letting it go just allows the body usually to heal itself if there's any real main injuries there. The body is really amazing just the way it can look after itself if you give it the chance. It's the tightness, the tension, the squashing up, pulling and pushing, that's what causes so many sicknesses. So you learn how to relax the body until your body is so relaxed that, you know, it's like you've been into a spa. Last week, that's actually almost where I was. I was teaching a retreat in a 5-star hotel on the beach in Thailand. Not a bad life being a monk. And all these people were there, and there's a spa available. And they went into the spa to get more relaxed on my meditation. So this actually really works. So you feel so beautifully relaxed in your body. And once your body is relaxed, then you do the same thing to your mental world, the emotional world. Your mind has got so many things pulling and pushing it, so much pressure on it. They're trying to live up to other people's expectations, or even living up to your own expectations as well. So much pressure and stress on you. That's actually why you think so much. Your string is so tight. So you can imagine your mind, just try and imagine it, even visualize it as a string, how tight it is. And learn just how to just relax it. Stop pulling and pushing it. Stop worrying so much. Meditation, no one's going to test you. No one's going to criticize you. No one's going to praise you. No one's going to do anything. You can just be. No pressure on you to perform, to achieve, to do anything. Just be, for goodness sake. So, when there's no pressure on you, find the mind actually relaxes. You're letting it be, you're aware of your mind. What I call, just like in a car, you have all these dials on the front of the car. Say one is like the temperature of the engine. If it's too hot, you're going to be in big trouble. Too cold, well, you're always in trouble. I don't know engines too much, but it's too cold, also being in trouble. So you keep the dial right in the middle there where it's supposed to be. So you can actually feel, a much better indicator is the speedometer. Too fast and you get pinged by the cops. Too slow and you get finger signs from the people behind you. you can see that speedometer. And of course you can feel from the pressure of your foot on the accelerator. Just know too much, and the needle goes too far, too little, the speed is not enough. So that gives you feedback. Every time you're pushing the pedal, you get feedback to make sure that needle's in the right place. That's exactly what we do looking at the peace meter of our mind. To keep it really peaceful, we find out that what we need to do is just to let it be. Be kind. Open the door of your heart to this moment. Just be kind to yourself, care for this moment. And then you find that all the stress, the inner stress, also disappears. And you also learn what it means to let go, to let things be. What's the difference between letting go and letting be? People keep asking me this. You let go of doing stuff, which means whatever's here right now, you let it be. Let go of changing, but just let this thing be, whatever it is. So you just become like an observer. You don't do anything. You sit here for a change. You sit here and really relax. Do you want to be lazy? No, some people think they're lazy. You don't know what laziness is. You need to be a monk, a meditator, know what real laziness is. Can you just sit there and do nothing for an hour? A lot of people can't. They keep thinking and planning and worrying and remembering. That's still much work. So when you meditate, you can sit here and do absolutely nothing. Not even think. Just be. Not going anywhere, not planning anywhere. Be 100% lazy for half an hour. And then you relax. You come out afterwards and you feel like recharged. Ready to face the world, but with a state of peace. Instead of just this chronic exhaustion. So, that's what meditation is. So easy. You don't have to do anything. What could be more easy than doing nothing? You know, people just don't know how to be lazy anymore. Sometimes, I'm as a kid, he had this terrible word, the devil makes work for idle hands.
Mm.
That's a stupid saying. That is what caused most of the stress in the Western world. It's also, someone once said, the Protestant, no, they're not Protestants, those extreme Protestants, what they call the Calvinists. They said their biggest fear, the Calvinists' biggest fear, was that someone, somewhere, was happy. It was, actually. It's the Puritans. So anyway, look, learn how to relax, for goodness sake. That's one of the things you learn if ever you go to Asia, at least in the old days. People can just hang out and chill out, just relax. These days, people always have to be doing something. So meditation is not doing something, okay? Meditation is the opposite, it's relaxing. Just being. Not trying to get anywhere, but just to be where you already are. Okay? Okay. Anyway, we'll give it a try. Any questions? No, thank you. You ask questions afterwards. Okie dokie. So I'm going to go on the floor, because I like being on the floor. I know my place. Okay, do you want the stick next to me? The recorder?
Yes, please.
Okay, I will take the recorder.
I thought you meant to put a stick to hit us.
Oh, that would be good fun. You can't do that anymore. It's against the law. Because when I was in Hong Kong once, a Chinese monk, I get to know what's going on around the world. A Chinese monk told me that when they had one of his Zen retreats in mainland China, you know, with a Zen monk coming around with a stick, whacking people on the back if they started nodding and falling asleep. He did that to this middle-aged lady. Had her on the back. She immediately got out her mobile phone, turned it on, called the police, and the police came, arrested him, and took him away. So you can't do that anymore. Traditions are changing. So don't try that, Rachel, when I'm away. That's also stupid. It's got nothing to do with meditation. Hitting people on the back with a stick. Where did that come from? I don't know. Anyway, that's not going to happen here. So, closing your eyes, and just relaxing in your chair, trying to get yourself comfortable. Now you think you may be comfortable, but that's not good enough. I want real deep comfort. So, first of all, check your bum. Is your buttocks comfortable on the cushion, if you're sitting on a cushion, or on the chair? Please fidget. Is that better? If not, fidget some more. Until you can find the optimum position for your bottom. What you're doing, you're being mindful of the feeling, the comfort of your bottom, and you're moving around. That's kindness. You're not just assuming and just telling bottom, you look after yourself, I'm not caring for you. No, you're caring for that part of your body. So you're sitting comfortably. You're taking some time and effort and care. Next, your legs. Just be aware, mindful of your legs dangling over the end of the chair. Do they need to be pushed apart, brought together, the feet pushed a bit forward or tucked in? Are they comfortable? So again, you're aware of those feelings in your legs. You move them until you find the best position. Now you go to your back. How is your back? People have so many problems with their back, mostly because they're not aware of how their posture when they're at work or driving a car, or you know, when they're working, that's where they get back injuries. So be aware just of that area called your back. How is it? You can stretch it, twist it around, move it, relax the shoulders. Get the back as comfortable as you can by moving it this way and that. And next you go to your arms and hands. People are always moving their arms and hands because they're never in a comfortable position. So you can put your hands in your lap, you can fold them, you can put them on your knees. You find the best position for you. Experiment, trial and error. And then go to your head. Especially be mindful of the feelings around, the sensations around your eyes, in your forehead, around your mouth. Because those muscles are a very accurate indicator of how stressed, angry, or happy you are. Once you can be aware of those muscles, you can actually just by trial and error learn how to relax them. So you're relaxing the muscles around your eyes and around your mouth and your head. So the whole face feels at ease. Just to stop there, if you possibly can, be aware of the muscles around the mouth and see if you can put a little smile on your face. When you smile, everything becomes so much easier. When I was young, a long time ago, I used to do rowing as a sport. I do remember a coach once shouted at me. He said, you know, you're making an ugly face. Smile. And as soon as I smiled, the oar was much easier to pull. It was amazing. So smile. If you can't make a smile, fake one. Just check the whole body is in a good posture. Once you think the body is in a good posture, now look through your body to find one area which is a little bit irritated or painful. For me, it is my throat right now. There's some irritation that wants me to cough. So I'm aware of that feeling, zooming in on it like Google Maps, filling all my mind as much as possible with that irritation. For you it may be in your guts, you may have irritable bowel syndrome, you may have some pain in your knees, or headache, migraine. Focus on that irritation or pain. And once you have your attention fully on that feeling, watch it change. Sometimes it gets worse, more painful, more tense. Sometimes it relaxes, it eases off. See if you can join the dots and see it. It's your attitude of mind, how you regard it. That is what relaxes those sensations, or that's what makes it worse. And soon, through the feedback given by mindfulness, you will be able to associate this thing we call letting be with relaxation, with easing of tightness and tensions in the body. If you have an irritation or a pain, again you can imagine it like a rope being pulled on both ends, being stretched, taut and tense. And then you imagine letting go of both ends, till the rope, the string becomes loose, with no stress, no tension in it at all. If you imagine that, irritation in the body, you find the irritation gets less, just a tiny bit less. It's not going to disappear all in one go. It's going to be diminished and then lessen some more and then further reduced. Little by little, we take that one area of the body which is irritating and relax that irritation fully away. Using mindfulness and letting be. It is a work, keep on experimenting, trial and error, and you soon learn how to relax this irritating part of your body. As it gets less irritating, you get the payback, a little bit more peace and happiness and freedom. That encourages you to relax it even deeper. You find it works. And as that irritation starts to disappear, you feel the body relax. Sometimes the irritation feels like you're pressing on it, squashing it, putting this pressure on this part of the body. Imagine taking all the pressure off, like part of the body being in a vice. You loosen the vice so it's not pressing on your body anymore. And the irritation, the pain diminishes. Staying on my throat till it feels free. And then once one area has been relaxed, I usually go to at least one more area. Maybe it's your knees or your stomach. Focus on that area. Feel the irritation, the tension, the tightness. Once you are mindful of it, once you have the opportunity to get feedback, to notice the sensation change, see if you can learn how to relax it. Open the door of your heart to that feeling. Being kind to it, being gentle, making peace with it, letting it be. And noticing the feeling become more easy, more comfortable, as the tension dissipates. I relax my body this way, not just irritations vanish, but my body starts to tingle with what I imagine would be the result if you did pay a lot of money and go to a spa, if you had a deep massage, or if you just was in a hot pool for an hour. All of the tightnesses, tensions in the body would just open up and you get so relaxed. That's the feeling I've got now. A body at ease. Healthy. I just linger with the pleasure, and it is pleasurable, of a relaxed body. Because as I linger with the delight of a body at ease, the relaxation goes even deeper. Noticing how pleasurable it is takes it to another level. Now my body is as relaxed as I can get it. I look at my mind, mindful of how peaceful I am or how agitated I am. And that is the indicator which I put my attention on. Just like I notice how tense and painful my body might be, how irritated some parts were, I do the same with my mental world. I focus on an irritating part of my mind. I don't notice its particulars, but it's the general stress, the tightness. When I'm mindful of that, I've got some power over it. I can see it change, see my mind become more relaxed or more tense. I get feedback. And I know that what lessens the tightness, the tension in my mind is just letting be, being kind, opening the door of my heart to this moment, making peace with this moment, not war, just being. And I get feedback, just like my body relaxed. So my mind relaxes. Not trying to do something. Not trying to achieve things. Just relaxing, just being. Find my mind getting more tense, it's going in the wrong direction. Change. So my mind becomes really at peace, relaxed. It becomes like a string which is not pulled on either end. It's loose. No pressure on it. In particular, I notice just how worries of the future keep pulling up my mind, stretching it. I let that one go. Now is where my future is being made. This is the only time I will ever have. If I get this right now, my future will be sweet. And as the past, I've been dragging that around for too long. Put that down, let that go. and my mind is relaxed. No pressure, no tightness, no heavy weights pressing on it. All you're aware of right now is this thing we call peace of mind. Either its absence or its presence, or exactly how much. How much irritation or how much peace. See if you can move more towards peace. You don't have to change anything or get anywhere to have peace of mind. Just being where you are. Resting for a while, recharging. Keep on focusing on peace and how to make it stronger, taking off all the tension, the tightness, the force. Just being. See what makes peace of mind stronger. That is letting go. You can also notice the pleasure of being peaceful, sense of freedom, just like you've been carrying heavy weights, you put them down, you're free of burdens, you've had all this work to do and now you're on holiday, far from it all. Just being, being peace. Now if you want to just be aware of your breathing, sometimes we use that as an anchor to be peaceful. Just know your breath going in and going out. And as you're breathing in, you can breathe in peace. Breathe in more peace. And as you breathe out, let go. Whatever you need to let go of in your life, let it go little by little with every out breath. Breathing in peace, health. Breathe out, let go. Calm and peaceful. Very close to the end of the meditation now. How peaceful are you? How relaxed is your body? How delightful is peace? Ringing the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong, open your eyes to come out from the meditation. Very good. There we go. Is that okay today? Especially those first timers? Hopefully you felt nicely relaxed. Trouble is that sometimes when I teach like this, people get so relaxed they fall asleep. I once was teaching meditation, and I think, the Casuarina jail. And I always had to have a prison officer with me all times, with about four or five prisoners. And during the middle of the meditation, I heard someone snoring. So I opened my eyes, and guess who was snoring? The officer, yeah. And one of my disciples, the prisoners, was almost got his hand on his keys. I caught him just in time. The prison officer would have been in big trouble. Anyway, any questions in the back today?
No, none in the box.
None in the box, okay, we can leave early. So off we go. No, I can't get away that way. No. So what would you like me to talk about today?
What about happy memories?
Happy memories, that's a very nice thing to talk about, because how many of you, when you do remember stuff, you remember all the bad stuff? Yeah, no, not me. No, I decided a long time ago, if I'm going to remember anything, I'm just going to remember the beautiful times of life. Because they're actually, if you really look closely and fairly, the happy times, I'm saying this, I don't know what you've been through in your past, but the happy times are usually much more than the miserable times. But the miserable times are ones which we keep. It's absolutely ridiculous and stupid. It's just I usually use the simile of the photograph album. Because people like taking photographs. And they put them in their album. Or they put them on their computer these days. And sometimes the really nice ones, they print them out. And they put on their wall. And I've been to many people's houses. And I've seen their photographs on their wall when they're on holiday in Bali. Or when they get married, they have a photograph then. Or with their first kids. Or you see them, oh, what else do they have? Oh, I don't know why, if you manage to graduate from a college, that's always in there. You see all the happy photographs on the wall. I've seen so many photographs of people's marriages on the wall. I've never yet seen a photograph of their divorce. I've seen the... Actually, no, yeah, we don't call it divorce anymore, you know. In Buddhism, we don't call it divorce. We call it recycling. So many people these days get recycled. But don't get divorced. Take away the bad words. Change the words and the whole thing gets changed. Well, some of it does anyway. So we don't have divorce lawyers in Buddhism, we have recycling lawyers. Anyway, no, let's go back to happy memories. So, we never have pictures, we have pictures on holiday, we never have pictures of being stuck in traffic on the way to work. You never notice that, we only keep the happy memories. I've never seen, a picture of somebody in hospital with all the tubes on them. You know, they don't keep those ones. They keep the happy ones, on holiday somewhere. Why do we do that? It's because we want to look at those to remind us of happy moments. And it does work. It does actually uplift us. It makes us feel to joy when we look at that past. And as soon as we look at that past, it just we resonate with the happy memories. It's very psychologically positive. But what do we do when we remember the bad stuff of the past? What happens then is it pulls us down. We get angry, we get upset. It takes away all of our energy, all of our happiness. We just get drained of happiness when we keep remembering the bad stuff which happened to us in the past. And it doesn't really help. I went to a business school, a big group of business people in Bangkok. You know, on Tuesday last week. Yeah, I think last Tuesday. That's where I was. And there, no, no, it's Monday, sorry, not Tuesday. And there, I was telling people that if you want to have a successful business, when something goes wrong, let it go. Stop thinking about it. When something goes right, then have a big meeting and discuss why it went right and who was responsible for it going right. Instead of finding out who's to blame when it goes wrong. Imagine that in sort of some company or business or some office, when you keep focusing all the time on the mistakes and looking for someone to blame. Does that ever help at all? It takes the motivation down, the energy down, the esprit de corps down. You know, imagine if the Dockers kept on doing that. Why do we keep losing? Why do we forget about that? But when they start winning, they should have a big meeting together and really analyze it. Why did we keep winning the last three matches? That's what you've got to really do. Focus on the causes for success, the causes of happiness. And you can only do that by really focusing, remembering the happy memories. So, I tell this with, you know, I'm responsible to many people getting married. I do their blessings, and so they depend upon me for happy marriages, and I depend upon it too, because if they get into trouble, it's me they come and bother with counseling and asking questions, and it's just too much for me. So I want to get it right first of all. So actually, have you heard about the three rings of marriage?
Yes.
No, you haven't. There's three new ones.
Three new ones. So we have six now.
No, the old ones. They're old. The old ones were the three rings of marriage, were the engagement ring, the wedding ring, and the suffer ring. That's the old one. But the new ones are, first one is offer ring, offer yourselves to each other. The next one is the share ring. And the last one is the care ring.
Aww.
Those are the new three new rings of marriage. Because I learned this when I go overseas and get some of the material from other monks as well. Another thing which I learned, which is really interesting, was when you're in love, when you really care for somebody, you actually speak quite softly to them. You know, when you're in love, you speak softly. Why is that? It's because when you're in love and you care for somebody, you are close together. But when you're upset and angry, you shout at them. Why do you shout? Because when you're angry, you are far apart. You do need to shout. So the reason why we shout at each other is because we move far apart. That's why you shout when you're angry. Anger is actually, you're separated, you're distant from somebody. When you care for someone, you're actually close together. That's actually, you need to speak softly. That's why some monks who come here speak very softly, because they're so kind and they're so close to you. Okay, anyway, that's an excuse. Okay, it doesn't work because you can't hear what the hell they're saying. But anyway, that's an interesting thing. But anyway, going back to sort of the marriage, I say, why is it we spend like a weekend or something, one thing which goes wrong, that's what we remember, and all the other beautiful stuff, the fine stuff, the happy stuff, we just take that for granted, we forget about it. You come late once, and you have to remember that for the rest of the week, actually the rest of the life sometimes. It's not fair, is it? You know, this is an example. This actually, these are anecdotes from my life teaching. I was giving a talk in a university in Malaysia. At the end of the talk, this lady put up her hand, question time. And a real important question. She respected me and my experience and wisdom, so she asked me this question. She said, "My husband, this morning, I found out he lied to me. He lied to me. No doubt about it. I can't trust him anymore. Should I get divorced?" That's what she asked me. And so, to answer her, I just gathered a bit more information. I said, "Well, at this university, what do you do?" And she said, "Actually, I'm a maths teacher at this university. And actually, she saw my opportunity.
I said, how long have you been married? She said, 3 years. So I said, I did maths before. 3 years, no, 365 days, that's about 1,000 days. So let's, you've been married 1,000 days. And let's, for this argument on statistics, let's assume that on average over the 3 years of marriage, your husband has said 20 things to you every day, on average, which could be right, which could be wrong. That's like a fair assumption. 20 statements which could be right, which could be wrong, over the course of your 3 years. Now he's lied for the first time. According to probability theory, 20 things a day he said to you over 1,000 days, that's 20,000 statements he's made, and now he's lied for the first time. According to probability theory, the next time he opens his mouth, there's a 20,000 to 1 chance he's telling the truth. What do you mean you can't trust him? That's pretty. Now, if there are politicians, 20,000 times they told the truth, only one time they'd lied, I'd elect them. I'd vote for them. Isn't that trustworthy? 20,000 to 1. But why is it? One lie, and that's all we remember. We want to divorce them. Give them a break. So one lie doesn't make you untrustworthy. One lie doesn't make you a liar.
Or two makes it.
Two, okay, very nice. Of course, well, that's still only 5,000 to 1.
Oh.
Look, if you had a 5,000 to 1 chance of winning the lottery, you'd buy a ticket.
Yeah.
So anyway, so why is it, what it's doing here is focusing on why is it we always look at the bad part of stuff. And why is it we always focus on that? So if you're married, if you're in a relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, for goodness sake, if something goes wrong in the weekend, forget it, let it go. If something goes right, remember that. Why do you have a wonderful weekend with your partner? Why? Learn from successes. Don't ever sort of worry about mistakes. Because the mistakes in life, we let them go. We all make mistakes. But what really motivates us, creates this really bond, gives you a lot of motivation to, you know, to do better, is to learn from successes. What works? Instead of always worrying about what goes wrong. Those are why we get our nice memories and forget about the bad ones. Because the bad ones, it's those ones which just make us break up relationships with others and also makes us feel terrible about ourselves. We all think we're losers. We all think we're hopeless. Because we made mistakes and that's all we really remember. How about remembering the other part of your life as well? A wonderful memory. So sometimes it's so hard to do that. It's just basic psychology which I have to teach and get to know. I never studied anything, just noticed being observant in life. You know, that there was this one guy, he was felt so bad about himself, true story. And so I did the old trick of getting a piece of paper, lying down the centre, put his name at the top, and on the left-hand side of the line, write all the things you've done wrong. All the reasons why you're a loser, a hopeless case, a stain on humanity, a disgrace to your species. Whatever it is. Write it down. He had no trouble doing that at all. He really wrote that down. In fact, there wasn't enough space. I had to write in the margins, you know, between the sentences. And then I said, okay, once you fill that up, on the right-hand side, all the things which you can be proud of, all the great good stuff you've done, all the wonderful happy things you've done for yourself and others. You know what he said? He said, there's nothing. Can't do anything. I said, come on, you must be able to think. I can't think of anything. Nothing at all. That's actually what it's like when you focus on the mistakes. You just can't see anything else. So I had to prompt him. You know how I prompted him? I said, well, have you got any pets? He said, I've got a cat. Did you feed the cat some money? Yeah, I fed the cat some milk. Put it down. Fed the cat some milk.
How long have you been married?
I don't need to be to know. You don't need to have had cancer to be an oncologist. Thank goodness. So anyway, so put it down. You put it down. And it's amazing. Once you've got that first one, once you get the break, once you start seeing the good in what you've done in the past, once you get that first happy memory, just like your mind is looking at some other part of you, and once you start, you get something else. And this guy, I had to force him to get the first one down. The second one came easily, and soon he filled the right hand part of the piece of paper up. You know what I did next to him? I said, okay, right, scissors, cut it down the middle. Now laminate the right half and carry it around with you wherever you go. To remind yourself that, you know, in front of me, this is actually what you remembered about yourself, your goodness, your happy memories. Keep that. So whenever you get depressed or angry, upset, get that out so you can remind yourself of who you really are. If someone was really up themselves, like a Donald Trump, I'd like to get them to do the other half. And they can laminate, you know, the bad part of themselves, you know, just balance them. But most people don't need that. Most people just need to remember the beautiful side, get some of the happy memories. When you get the happy memories, you know, what you've actually done, and you remember them, and you focus on them, and you learn from them, it's incredible just the effect that has on people's lives. Health disappears. Oh, no, not disappears, I mean health problems disappear. No, health disappears because you have this motivation, this happiness. That is one of the most important things of good health, to have a happy life. And if you're miserable, disappointed because you've had a tough life, of course you get sick. And that happiness does increase the immune system. It does get rid of so many other problems and difficulties in your life. So that's one of the reasons Patch Adams, dressing up as a fairy and going around to people dying of cancer, and you know, some of them actually recovered. Well, I've got to be very careful sometimes when I go to hospital, because I remember going to this hospital once with this woman who had hysterectomy. And it's a very, very difficult operation for a woman. It means, like, you know, your childbearing days are over. You can't have a kid anymore. That's taking part of who you are away from you. So emotionally, it's just a very, very tough operation. So one of the people asked me, you know, they're going through a bit of depression, can you please come and cheer me up? So I went into her room, but the first thing she said was, please, no jokes. Have you ever had a hysterectomy? You've got this big scar over you, and it hurts. But look, if you had a hysterectomy and got a scar, do not invite me. I just can't help myself. So I was telling all these jokes. She was laughing and crying in pain at the same time. I can't help myself, poor girl. But anyway, at least it sort of, you know, cheered her up and made her a little bit more. I don't know what last time I told this story. Just this guy used to live in Rolling Stone, up the road from you. And what's his name? Ted. He was a smoker. From Yorkshire. And he was a smoker and so got cancer. He's an old guy. And in the end, they put him in the hospice. It was actually the Murdoch Hospice. One of the first patients who went in there. So as soon as they put him in there, I went to see him and he told me what happened the first day. First day in the hospice, you know, went there to die. And they said to him, so what do you want for dinner tonight? And he said, well, you know, I've got high cholesterol, so I can't have anything with oil. I've got hardened arteries, I can't have salt. I've got diabetes, so I can't have any sugar. And the nurse looked at him and said, what the hell are you talking about? You're not going to die of diabetes or cholesterol or a heart attack. You're going to die of cancer. So you can eat whatever you want. And old Ted, really? So he pigged out on all the food which his wife would never ever let him even smell for 3 years. All his favourite dishes, he ate them all. And he didn't worry one bit about the sugar content or the salt or the oil, because he was going to die of cancer instead. And you know what? Absolutely true story. About 7 days later, they released him from the hospice. But he got better. He walked out of there. You know, he went back 6 months later to die properly. He got an extra few months. And why was it? Because he was happy. You know, he had all his favourite foods, for goodness sake. So like happiness and joy, happy memories, that actually makes you healthy. gets you better again. And it's also we learn from those stories, and it means that we just get good health, good happiness, and also we're much nicer people to live with. Oh, for goodness sake, how many people have to put up with you? So when you're a little less of a pain in the ass, to other people, that creates happiness for other people. And this is actually how you do that. I teach all sorts of people, like pre-marriage, kids, going out with each other. This is a wonderful thing that for teenagers. It's one thing I was never taught when I was a teenager, what I have to do to be attractive to the opposite gender. No, I never said that to you. So you know what you did? That's why boys do stupid things. They think they're being cool and being attractive, but they're not. And so once I took this youth group, there was about 1,200 of them. Again, it was happened to be in Malaysia. Split them up into the two genders. And I told the girls, okay, girls, what do you like in a boy? What do you find attractive? What type of boy would you like to go out with and have a relationship with? All the boys were really listening. they wanted to find out, from the source, from the horse's mouth. Not so to speak. one of the things they always said, they like to be going out with someone who's kind and is fun to be with. And they said they don't have to be tough, muscular with big abs. Those sorts of things happen. They help sometimes. They want someone who's kind, reliable, trustworthy, and fun to be with. And I asked the girls, and then I asked the guys, and they came up with the same. You don't have to be hot. You don't have to wear expensive clothes. They want someone who's fun to be with, who's kind, trustworthy. Especially the fun to be with bit. Isn't that just what you'd love in a relationship? Just someone who's happy, because you need to be happy sometimes. And if you give that happiness to other people, and you only do that by remembering the good stuff. And all the bad memories of the past, I just let them go. Yeah, okay, that you do have stuff you have to deal with. But my old story, which you've heard so many times, but it is a cracker of a story. It is that the bad stuff which happens to you is we call that dog shit. So it is just like you walk out of here and before you get into your car, you tread in a pile of dog shit and it gets all over your shoes.
Everybody be looking at their shoes tonight.
Yeah, okay. But it does happen, okay? It's happened to me before, it's happened to you. So what do you do? Now, after today, please never scrape it off your shoes. Always must take it home with you. Always, okay? That's people's big mistake. That's stupid. Take it home with you. And when you get home, then you can scrape it off in the garden under your mango tree or apple tree, whatever you've got in your garden. Say your apple tree. And if you scrape off the dog shit under your apple tree, 1 year later, your apples will be juicier and sweeter than ever before. And you must always remember where that extra juice and sweetness came from. Where you're biting into that apple and the juice is just dripping down your cheek. You must remember that what I'm eating is dog shit. Transformed into juicy apple. And that's true. You can't deny that. That's where it comes from. And that is just how we understand. If there are any bad memories of the past, dig it in. And dig it in. Under your apple tree, which is your heart, dig it in, and 1 year later, your heart will be sweeter, more wise, more compassionate than ever before. And when anybody says, "Oh, you're such a kind, wise person," always give credit where credit's due. The dog shit of life may be like this.
More dog shit, the better. Then.
Exactly, yeah. Because that's a fertilizer, so well, you do have difficulties in life. You know, if you can't just let it go, at least dig it in. Learn from it and transform it. That's what happens. You know, people actually, instead of getting negative about it, you've got something to learn from this. Become a better person, a kinder person. One of the things is, please give people benefit of the doubt. Don't always be so critical of one another, because I've made mistakes, I've done stupid things sometimes, and I know people have totally misunderstood what I was doing. Just like this time, I don't know how long ago I said this, I made a confession. I don't know if you've ever seen just all these religious figures always getting into mischief. And I thought that honesty was really important. So a few years ago, in public, I made a confession. Some years ago, I said, I spent some of the happiest hours of my life in the loving arms of another man's wife. I did. We kissed, we loved each other so much. And she was married to someone else. It was my mother. She was married to my dad. But how many of you thought, oh, that's adultery? So the wonderful hours in the loving arms of another man's wife. Okay, that was absolutely true. We kissed, we hugged, we loved each other dearly. That was my mum. But you add two and two together, you get five, and you get adultery, bad muck. Now you can see just how we can totally misunderstand people sometimes. So always give people the benefit of the doubt, give life the benefit of the doubt. It hasn't got it in for you. Just life is life, it's there to learn from. And you accept it. When it's a shit, you dig it in. When it's happy times, you remember those. Remember them as much as you can. Write them down. Photograph them if you can. And keep them so that you always got these beautiful things to remember. And then life is always so happy. But just like that guy, Ted, you go into the hospice and you're out in 7 days. Get out of here. You shouldn't be in here anymore. Just because he had this happiness of just indulging in his favourite foods. Okay, any questions or comments? I've rabbited on for another half an hour. A few golden oldies and stories.